So this over the next 20 minutes, I'm going to talk about some clients in the realm of cloud computing or enterprise cloud computing, and some of the issues that we're facing in regards to what that really means in regards to data protection overall. Okay. Let's hope this clicker works. All right. So I'm not really used to presenting in this format, so apologies if I'm a little stumbling or a little slow. Anyway, so what I want to talk about here is really the kind of inception of cloud computing. So I started in cloud computing around 2002 when I was with Oracle and in the on-demand space. Okay. And, you know, at that time, cloud computing was really an anathema to a lot of organizations and a lot of industry. No one knew what it was, and we were still just kind of defining it. Everyone was still working with, you know, their own on-prem solutions in some way, shape, or form. Okay. But we kind of made the move or sold cloud computing under the notion of it being a utility. Does anyone remember when, you know, in 2002, 2005, a hand went up here, you know, I was with Salesforce, we were touting this thing about it being a utility, where you could actually have extensible software being deployed in your organization quickly, effectively, and getting people to use it really rapidly with the most modern and up-to-date technology being deployed on a monthly, quarterly, daily basis, whatever the cadence was. And really, there was no real forethought around security at that time. Does anyone remember those days when it was all about features and not necessarily, you know, the security of the data and what happened to the data as it moved around the organization or as it moved around the cloud provider? Okay. So one of the big things with that whole notion of it being a utility was the fact that there's a significant reduction in cost in terms of if you ran your own systems. You know, if you ran your own infrastructure, then that was going to be super expensive. And one of the things we used to sell it on was the fact that we're going to be significantly cheaper. And the fact that you're running in a multi-tenant environment where you can actually make the gains from, you know, everyone else in the organization. So for example, I'm at the MGM Grand, right? So it's like kind of renting a room in the MGM Grand. Everyone gets the same room, everyone gets the same security, everyone gets the same kind of food and heating and cooling and all that kind of thing. Okay? So what the thing is, it's actually a lot cheaper than me going and buying a house or an apartment and actually living in Las Vegas. Okay? So this whole notion of actually renting space, renting systems, and actually renting the software at the end of the day. And you're paying on a pay-per-user kind of deal. And all us cloud providers, you're actually running our own infrastructure. When I was at Salesforce, what we used to do is, you know, we used to have our software running, and we used to run our software in data centers that weren't necessarily Salesforce data centers. We're actually running that software in data centers that we're renting. We're renting space in those data centers. We own the equipment, but we're actually just, you know, renting the space in essence. And the same thing applies to Box. Everyone in the cloud computing environment is actually doing that at that time. Okay? We're all renting space. But what's happened in the enterprise cloud computing companies kind of arena is the fact we're now leveraging other cloud providers in the provision of the services that we're delivering to you guys. Okay? Say, for example, you know, there's functionality, there's workflow that perhaps delivering. That workflow may go to another cloud provider that's generating or doing something for that data, and then feeding it back into Box or feeding it back into Salesforce. So you're actually getting a fragmentation of the enterprise cloud solution you get deployed within your organization. And that causes a very, very different issue to be raised in regards to overall data protection. When you start to look at data protection in if you're leveraging an enterprise cloud solution, you're just thinking typically flatly of your main provider. If you're thinking of Salesforce, you're looking at Salesforce, and that's as far as you're going. If you're looking at Box, you just look at Box, and that's as far as you go. Same thing with the Workday, same thing with a Concur, same thing with a NetSuite. No one's really recognizing that underneath that, there are sub-suppliers who are actually providing additional services to the services that you're providing. And that kind of changes the profile and risk profile of a view of an organization in regards to information security and overall data protection. Because your data is actually weaving in and out of these different cloud providers in the provision of the service. Okay? So, reiterating once again on that point that the data protection question is becoming more and more and more complex. And you as individuals, if you're anyone who's actually managing an enterprise cloud solution in terms of part of their ecosystem, you have to recognize that it's getting more and more fragmented. And you as the data controller, where you're pushing that data into an enterprise cloud solution, you still have an obligation to understand how that data is actually moving through all of that infrastructure, all of those different services that are being provided. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you guys still have the responsibility in regards to overall data protection. Okay? So that applies to you, whether you're actually using an on-prem solution still, but also if you're using an enterprise cloud solution. And we look at data protection in two ways. Data security, okay, which is how is that data secure? Does an organization have the right controls in place to, you know, effectively mitigate the potential loss of that data or information? The other component of this is data privacy. You've got to think that when you actually interface with an enterprise cloud solution, you're providing a lot of information up into that cloud. Okay? For example, within Box, you're actually uploading content into the Box cloud. But also, as you're actually uploading that content into the Box cloud, you're capturing metadata associated with the user. Okay? That data then becomes an issue in regards to overall data protection for that individual's user, for that individual's data type that's been entered into the cloud. Okay? And that's when data privacy starts to kick in a big way. Because how is that organization using that metadata around the content that's been uploaded? And when you look at the different enterprise cloud solutions, you look at Box, we have probably 90% of the data that we have is unstructured data, 10% is structured data. What I mean by structured data is that content that surrounds the files that have been uploaded, and that's going into a structured database, for example. If you look at a Salesforce is totally different. Salesforce, probably 95% of Salesforce's data types is actually structured data, and 5% is probably unstructured data. Either way, those cloud providers have to have the right controls in place to ensure data privacy, but also data protection, data security. Okay. So how many of you guys in here are really looking at things like data protection, data privacy? What is that enterprise cloud company doing with the data it's capturing around an individual's use of the application? Okay. The question you need to be asking yourself is, does that enterprise cloud provider have the right controls around ensuring that they're not doing something inappropriate with that data? Okay. And we've all seen public cloud providers like Facebook, for example. You know, we use Facebook on an ongoing basis, and then all of a sudden you'll see kind of pop-up ads appear in your Facebook thing. You'll see an email come through that says, would you be interested in buying ABC DOE? It also applies with Amazon. What they're doing is actually capturing that metadata and actually putting that into some analysis and then sending that information back to you. And that's in the public cloud. In the enterprise cloud environment, we have to make sure that, first of all, the data is secure, but also in regards to data privacy, that enterprise cloud provider does not do anything with that data other than provide the services. Okay? They may do analytics in terms of improving the service, but they should not be selling that data on or doing anything like that with that data. They can only use that data to provide the services to you as an organization. So if they're doing something different, then you've got an issue in regards to something that's quite significant is going to happen later on, actually in 2018. So May 2018. So apart from it being Jade's birthday, who's behind you there, May 2018 is really the drop-dead date for the European data privacy regulations coming out in place. And why I'm actually mentioning this is that if any of you actually have European national data captured in either the metadata or in content, then you have to comply with what's called the General Data Protection Regulation that's coming down out of Europe. Okay? Why it's important is the fact that the Europeans are going very, very serious around how any organization is managing European national data and what they can do with it. At the moment, under the GDPR, which is the regulation, there's up to a 4% gross revenue fine if you actually are misusing any of that content and information within the European Union. And can guarantee, you know, this is May 2018, I think in June, July of 2018, the European regulators are going to start looking for organizations to kind of use as examples to say, hey, you have all of this European national data residing in your databases or within your systems, how do you secure it? How do you ensure effective data privacy and how that privacy actually marries up to the regulation in regard to European data privacy regulations? So how many of you in this organization are international companies? Do you have any international companies? Okay, you probably do, all right? So you're probably actually interfacing in some way, shape, or form with a European national. If you start to capture that information and put it into the cloud, then you need to understand what that cloud provider is doing. But also, likewise, if you're still maintaining your own infrastructure and you're capturing that information even in your own infrastructure, then the GDPR regulation still applies to you guys, even in your own infrastructure. And you have to go through a formal process of analyzing information systems, how secure those systems, and what happens to that data within your organization. This is the GDPR in terms of the 10 or 11, so like 8 kind of core things within the GDPR. Alright? Now this is pretty serious stuff, and everyone I speak to in Europe are really, really concerned about this. A customer about 3 weeks ago, he's a European customer, and they have something like 17,000 employees, 3,000 cloud applications that they're running across their entire organization, and have not even started looking at GDPR and understanding that, you know, do we have the right controls in place for effective data protection. So they've got a year to get that done. If they don't get it done within the year, and there's a data leakage, and the regulators come after them, then guess what? They're probably going to be subject to either a 4% gross revenue fine or $20 million, which is ever the higher. Okay? It's a shitload of cash for some companies. All right? So let's look at these things. I mean, some of them are actually operational and fairly easy to get through. I mean, things like identifying, you know, a data protection officer within your organization. That's relatively easy to go do. But that data protection officer has to report directly to the board of directors. Cannot report to anyone operationally in the business. Okay. The other thing in terms of breach notification, have to have a process in place for breach notification in the event that some data is lost. By the way, if you're using cloud providers, you expect to see these things within your cloud providers because they're going to be actually, or you'll be leveraging their information and they'll be feeding it back up to you in some way, shape, or form. Okay. The two most important things, and probably the hardest things here, are the bottom two, which is the data protection controls and the technical and organizational measures. Okay, those are the difficult ones to actually kind of define and put in place. So what we did at Vox is we actually reached out to the data processing agencies, DPAs as they're called, and that's the type in Europe. And what we did is we actually went to the German, French, and the UK data privacy agencies, because we consider those guys to be the most strict in regards to implementation or interpretation of the data privacy obligations. And it was a 2-year-ago conversation I actually started off with them, and the first kind of conversation I had was, well, how are you going to measure GDPR compliance? What does it mean? Especially in regards to the effective controls. Where is that baseline set of controls? Interestingly enough, they were still trying to define that regulation in terms of what that would look like, and they had no idea. So what we did, right, I don't know why that slides here, I just like it. I'll move on to the next one. What we did is, I said, okay, 2 years ago, if the German data privacy officers, the UK privacy officers, and the French Camille could not actually define for me a set of controls that they felt were effective to show effective data protection, then I better do it, okay? Because it's going to take me at least 2 years within Vox to actually get this done. So what I did, I started out with the most rigorous control set out there that I knew of, and that's the NIST 800-53 set of controls that falls under the US FedRAMP program, okay? And that's the fact it defines close to 370, 380 controls for different data types, and you actually classify your data types into low, medium, and high kind of data classifications. All right. So what we did at Vox, we actually started looking at our current control set through that lens, and that enabled us actually to go for the FedRAMP certification because we already had those controls in place. What we tagged onto this for our baseline was then the PCI controls, okay, the payment card industry controls. We selected that one because those guys actually have more specific controls around network management, network control. Okay, and then we wanted to get into the encryption area, and what we did is we looked at the US HIPAA addendum in regards to health information, and we looked at the encryption protocols required for that set of controls. And what we did is we actually designed a complete set of controls, close to 500 controls now within Box, for effective data protection. Okay. We actually took our control set to the Germans and the French after about 6 months into the conversation and said, what do you think? This is our control set. It's a 1,000-page document that defined all of the controls that we actually have in Box. And we suddenly got super excited because it was suddenly someone coming to them to say, rather than reinvent the wheel, here's the baseline set of controls that define how all these controls are implemented within the organization, but accurately define explicitly how these controls should be implemented within the organization, but also designed, and then also tested. And that's what the Europeans really like in regard to their privacy agencies. Okay? Once again, from Box's perspective, we went to the highest level in terms of the most rigid definition of data privacy, which is the Germans and the French, and we actually got their buy-off to say, yes, it's a decent set of controls. In actual fact, what I think they'll kind of land with, or that they'll land something a little lower than that, because it's kind of the bar is so high that a lot of companies will have trouble kind of attaining that level of certification or approval. Interesting enough, for Box, this is just a suite of certifications and approvals that we have, because we actually have that set of controls. Okay, we've got your ISO 27000 control set. We have the ISO 27018 for data privacy. In actual fact, I did ask the European data privacy agencies why they did not settle around the ISO 27001 certification. And the response was the fact that the controls aren't well defined within that standard. And the audit mechanism that's in place there doesn't meet the rigor that they expect in regards to continual testing. Okay? So this is why they're kind of designing their own. Alright? So that's one set of controls, or certifications and approvals that Box actually currently maintains. The other one is this one. Okay. We actually have another suite of certifications and approvals. Okay. You can actually see we actually have FedRAMP here. So Box isn't just standing on our laurels and actually going with a FedRAMP moderate level data type, which is NIST 800-53. We're fast moving up the scale to actually the high level data type of data. And also, you know, moving into the DoD IL4 type data. So all the way into defining security controls for sensitive data from the US government to reside in Box. Okay. What that does for us, though, it provides us a fantastic platform for any of our customers to actually put their content into Box and that content to be secure. Okay. The two interesting certifications here, though, that are starting to come through from Europe are these two. The C5 and the TCDP certifications approvals that we actually got last January. Okay. Now these are specific German certifications for data security and data privacy. Okay. And once again, we went to the Germans because, you know, they have a very strict interpretation of the overall data protection. And we wanted that high bar. And what we found is that here's the C5 on the left-hand side as you look at it. That's actually a certification that's come out of the Federal Office of Information Security within Germany. Okay. It talks about information security and the controls you're expected to have in place around your data as it resides within any cloud environment. But also, if you're still running your own, you know, on-prem solution, your control framework needs to kind of meet that standard in regards to information security. And the other component of this is the data privacy component. Okay. And that's where we actually have the Trusted Cloud Data Privacy, or TCDP. And that's actually a new standard that came out of, again, and that's actually from the German Federal Ministry of Economics. Okay. And all of our certifications and approvals are based on that baseline set that we actually defined 2.5 years ago, which is paid against the NIST standard. Interestingly enough, when the Germans and French looked at our baseline set of controls, and I told them it's a US standard, the bit that they actually turned down and kind of said with a wry smile, the problem is they said, we'd love to adopt that standard, but it's an American standard, okay? And, you know, I said, well, would it be a problem if we just changed it and put an ANSI number on it or an ISO number on it and that kind of thing? They said, well, we'd have to think about how we wanted to do that. But interestingly enough, if you really think about it, all of these controls that we put in place are actually US-based standard controls. the PCI stuff. I know that's, you know, payment card industry, but it's got a lot of roots in the US. And this 800-53, absolutely an American standard, and also the HIPAA standard, an American standard, okay? As I said, the Europeans like it. The only problem they have is the fact there's a not invented here kind of syndrome going on there, all right? So, interesting enough, once again, I put this slide up about 2 weeks ago in London, and a German audit company actually stood up and said, if you've got these two certifications, then in their opinion, in their view, you are really, really close to being GDPR compliant. Why they said really, really close is that, once again, the European Union, the data privacy agencies, haven't explicitly come out and said, this is what it is and this is what it's not. But the German auditing company that came up and said that they're really close, in actual fact, is actually working on the legislation themselves in terms of where that line in the sand really is. Right? So in a nutshell, in regards to overall data protection, and I know this is callback cyber security, but it's kind of got into that bigger discussion on data protection overall. You know, the thing to remember is that you as individuals within an organization where you actually are the data controllers and maybe pushing that responsibility to data process in terms of cloud providers, you still have the regulatory obligation for effective data protection. Okay? Especially from a European perspective. And we know from a European perspective, this is now moving across into the APAC region as well. Okay? We have a lot of APAC data privacy agencies in Japan and in Singapore kind of looking at the UK or European model to say we need to adopt that same model. Right? So I think we're going to start to see in APAC, we'll see the same sort of pressure as an organization in regards to overall data protection from the APAC regions as well. So we know that May 2018, the Europeans are going to be really looking and really scrutinizing us in regards to effective data protection, and that's going to morph over into the APAC world as well within another couple of years. And also there's going to be effective oversight, regulatory oversight. And one of the things that we always think in the US is that, you know, there isn't sufficient resources in the regulators to go and do this. And I can tell you now that all the regulators we've spoken to, the French, Germans, and English, they are actually resourcing themselves with auditors. And when I mean auditors, these are not guys that are fresh out of off the street, you know, school kids. These are guys that have to have between two and 3 years audit experience, but also between 3 and 5 years experience in technology and IT technology. So if you think you can pull the eyes over these auditors when they come in, you know, the wool over these eyes of these auditors when they come in, I think it's going to be a very, very different story. They're going to be able to look at something and say, you know, that's not right, or that's not right, or that's okay. I was amazed that when we actually had the German data privacy agencies come in, or German auditors come in and look at us through C5 and also TCDP, they were very, very knowledgeable. I mean, they were asking deep, deep questions that my team of auditors typically ask, but my team of auditors know box inside out. So these guys came, spent a couple of days just kind of understanding the infrastructure, and straight away they're getting really to the real nub of the control framework that we have in place. And, you know, we were sufficiently robust that we actually, you know, attained the certification and kind of met their requirements, but some companies aren't that robust. Okay, so they're getting really serious about it. But then you've got to think about your overlay of your enterprise cloud ecosystem you've developed. You've got to have the same kind of conversation with every cloud provider. How is every cloud provider that you're using provide the enterprise solution within your organization? What are they doing in regards to overall data protection, and do they comply with the GDPR requirements? Okay. So, are we out of time now? Great, I can wrap it up now with questions, if anyone has any questions.
Any questions, anybody? One.
There we are. GDPR is a huge thing. I'll just throw in my question. How about that? GDPR is huge. I mean, if you know the privacy and then the safe harbor and GDPR, this isn't something that's going to stop. Right? Especially when we talk about PII, which is the most important data to any individual. Right? I also think that just reflecting on which, by the way, that was a great overview and general data protection presentation. I was pretty much getting to do. Seriously. And I sat through a lot.
I'll give you $20 later on.
But I guess the most important piece also is what steps has Box taken on your side to ensure your German customers have data that resides in Germany? Is that something where you're working with the major cloud providers to make sure that that data stays segmented and segregated in the country and origin of use? Or is that something you're aspiring for?
Well, remember I said about 2 years ago we had a conversation with the Germans and asked them, you know, where is the line in the sand in regards to GDPR? The add-on to that question was, basically, I was pretty bold to do it. I said, you know, I asked them straight to their faces, you know, what issue do you actually have with data residing in the U.S.? And they actually said, we don't have any issue with data residing in the U.S., other than for very slim, specific data types. They said that the challenge for us, Box, is the fact that our customers did not know how to do an effective due diligence to their satisfaction that would actually show that we understood how the cloud worked, the security controls that were in place, against the data types that we actually had within the organizations, and they couldn't show them an effective due diligence, okay? So really, they were saying in a roundabout way that all the organizations that they're regulating in Germany didn't know how to look at cloud. So the thing is, from Box's perspective, we knew that that was going to be an uphill struggle to try and educate all of our customers or prospects around that, because we're dealing with very entrenched notions. So we actually came up with Box Zones, which enables you to actually store content in geographic regions. So for example, the German customers, if they want, they can actually store content in Frankfurt with a backup in Dublin. It's all part of the European Economic Union area, so that's fine. And the same kind of model we actually have with APAC. You can store data in Japan or Singapore. Okay, so that's how we kind of address those particular issues.
Wow, that's great. You know, look, data and security, they go hand in hand, so I really appreciate it. I told you we saved the best for last. Let's give a great round of applause to Kristen. Kristen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.